in jail there's a lot of good men with good hearts that have just done a bad thing for the right reasons.
One topic, two chicks, three points of view. What does it really mean to do time?
Police emergency.
Life in prison.
Keeping people safe is the first duty of government.
Oi, oi.
You can get spies, you can get heroin, you can get crack. No.
It is criminality, pure and simple.
I'm facing time.
It's not on the hiring ex-con scars.
I don't know how long, it could be 4 years, 10 years.
There's not one solution.
Could be life.
Who cares for the men behind these doors?
Bird.
Welcome to Season 3, Behind Bars with Bird. This season we'll be recording exclusively from different prisons across the UK. For our final episode of the season, we visited HMP Huel, which is a prison in Worcestershire for adult males.
This time we spoke to prison residents who are part of the Rainbow Project, which is an amazing initiative that offers a range of parenting courses designed to improve the parent-child relationship and to support children with parents in prison.
We met with Nikki and Helen, who run the programme in Huel. They work relentlessly and tirelessly to give the men inside much-needed support, and it was clear that the men involved were so grateful for their hard work.
Throughout the day, we heard different stories from fathers in prison and the importance of keeping strong family ties when in prison. When we sentence people to custody, there's a 45% chance they will lose contact with relatives whilst inside. The COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated a lack of physical contact with families. In many instances, prisoners were locked in their cells for 23 hours a day to accommodate staff shortages and to prevent transmission of the virus.
The rate of reoffending is 39% lower for those who receive visits from a partner or family member compared to those who don't receive those types of visits. One of the men we spoke to, Benji, is currently fighting for access to his children. Let's hear his story.
October 2018 it started. She stopped me from contact. I went into severe, because I'm diagnosed personality disorder and poor impulse control, ADHD. And I went into like severe mental health breakdown, and I was just doing stupid stuff for about 10 months. Then I ended up on the run, and I was on the run for 12 months. Then I came to prison. I was in prison for 7 months, I think I was in prison. I got released, got myself a job, started all my process, and then I came back for this charge, but this charge is from 2018 originally anyway. And then since I've been in 2021, I've been fighting non-stop. My ex-partner, my baby mum, stopped me from seeing the children. She won't let me see them unless I go to court. Obviously, being in prison and whatever I was being involved with, whatever I was involved with, wasn't in the good environment, whatever. So I've come to jail. I placed in an application to the courts to fight for access. And when I first landed in this jail, I put in my application and I was getting letters from the court saying, I need to do this, I need to do that. And I didn't have a clue, didn't know what it meant. So I went and spoke to the child and families team, and they just put me straight. And then with their help, we've been fighting since 2021. I was in court in March. I won access to my children, and then the baby mum didn't turn up to anything. So I've had to take her back to court. I'm in court in November, and these child and family supporting me all the way through. Yeah. I was in a little, how can I explain it? I was in a little hole when I first, because I didn't know what to do. It was overwhelming. I'd never been through them situations before. The letters was coming through. I didn't understand what they meant. Didn't understand how I'm supposed to do the process or anything. And they sat there with me and they just put me straight and whatever else. They helped me more than mental health or anything could. Because they put me on a straight path. I'm basically expecting the same outcome as I did the first time, but with a little bit more authority on this one, because there's in a family court, it's different. You have a lay justice advisor, which hasn't really got much power. They can, if you both agree to something, they can set it in place, but other than that, there's nothing they can do. Whereas when breaches keep happening with the case, then it gets moved to a magistrate's where there's an actual bench. Once there's a bench there, then they have authority to put orders in place, put breaches in place, and fine you, community service, in prison, whatever. They have powers to do that, where lay justice don't have them powers.
Benji shares how a broken relationship with his children's mother started to impact his access to them.
It should have started off with letters back in March, but obviously she didn't turn up, and it was supposed to progress on to phone calls, video calls, and then realistically, I haven't seen my children in a few years, so I don't want them to come and see me in a prison. Like, it's not for them to come and meet me again. It's not a good environment for them to come meet me again. Although, like, there's like you can have the family days, you've got visit halls, whatever else. I don't want them to come to the big gates and walk through on their first time of meeting me. So I'm not trying for that till I get out, but it should, realistically, this one, because it should have progressed on to video calls and whatever else already. That's what I'm fighting for now. I want pictures. I want to speak to them. I want them to hear my voice. I want to hear theirs. I want them to know that I'm not the person that people make me out to be. I'm their dad. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm hoping for. But worst case scenario, it'll just be the same as the original, where I have to start off with letters and then ask them for pictures. They'll ask me for pictures, and then we go on through that. I've chose to do it through a contact centre, because I don't believe that if I send the letters to the baby mum's address that she'll give them to the children. I don't believe that at all. So read the letters, and if the children want to write back, they'll also help them write the letters back, and it's correspondence to and from the contact centre, nowhere else. So it'll come direct to me and from me direct to them.
Benji shares more about how this process has impacted his mental health whilst in prison.
The good thing about doing it while I'm in jail is I've got nothing else to do. So if I didn't have this to focus on, I think it'd be a lot more difficult for me than it is, because the majority of my time, my effort, goes into sorting out statements for the children, writing letters to the children, sorting out court dates. I come to the Child and Families every single week, and we send emails to CAF, CAS, courts, wherever, whatever we need to do, contact centres, everything. So a lot of my time and my emotional time is put into this. So it's made my sentence a little bit easier, even though it's stressful, and it's something that keeps you occupied. And then when you go to court and she doesn't turn up, obviously it makes you a bit depressed and a bit down, and you walk around dragging your heels and whatever else. But then 2 days later, you're like, right, let's go again. Carry on, let's fight on, keep going. For me, it's a little bit different than it is for a lot of lads, because I've been here for so long. You build up relationships with prison officers, with other prisoners, whatever else. So, like, certain prison officers I can talk to that understand, they're like, oh, so how did court go with your children? How did this go? So like, that's kind of okay. But other than that, really, there is no support other than the Children and Families team, like, really, because we're men, we're supposed to be in this big, bad environment, and no one really wants to sit there and cry on someone's shoulder or whatever else, do you know what I mean? So I just chill on the wing and just get on with it. I would like to thank the Children and Families. Without seeing your children or having any contact with your children, a lot of men's mental health spirals out of control, and a lot of people won't admit it, and a lot of people won't say it, but it does. A lot of men's mental health spirals when they haven't got their contact with their children or whatever else. And I hope to get out soon rather than later and actually have some contact with my children and carry on in life.
After receiving help for his own situation from Nikki and Helen, Benji wanted to pay it forward and is now a Children and Families rep who helps others in similar situations navigate things.
I'm Child and Families rep. I help other lads fight who are in maybe same situations or similar situations who need to fight for their children. I help them with their court process, their applications, and we go through it all, and it's a good thing. It helps lads, because a lot of people come here and you don't know what to do, you don't know how to fight for your children, you don't think you can fight for your children, but just because I did a bad thing doesn't make me a bad person, do you know what I mean? So I'm a good dad, not a bad dad, do you know what I mean? I never did what I was involved in was around my children. That was elsewhere. So I deserve to see my kids same as every man who's a good person does. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's a long process, but it's a good process. Unless you've done it yourself, you don't know how it feels. Like, it's scary. So for me to be able to sit there with lads who are going through the same thing, it's a good thing to do, because I know exactly how they feel. I know exactly what they're going to go through. I know exactly how hard the fight is. And I've been through it. So when someone's been through it and they're trying to help you, it's much easier to get on with it.
What helped Benji is being involved in the Hidden Sentence course for professionals who work with families. This gives them an overview of the issues facing prisoners' families and a range of strategies and resources to help support them.
It's a whole morning where we come and, like, they separate everyone into little groups, and then because there's probably about four, five, maybe six prisoners, and then when there's a little groups, we all go individually to the little groups. We sit there, we have a chat, and we move from group to group, and we learn a little bit more about them, and they learn a lot more about us. And they basically just ask us questions. How are we doing? How's it going? How does things work? What do the children families team do? And things like that. A lot of people's perceptions are different till they come in and meet us, and they sit there and they speak to us, and they realise we're not all nasty people who run around doing horrible things. Like, in jail there's a lot of good men with good hearts that have just done a bad thing for the right reasons. And a lot of people realise that when they come in and speak to us.
Next we hear from David, who is another child and family rep for the Rainbow Project. David talks about how he got involved.
How I come to be the family rep, my wife, she struggles with panic attacks. I've had two or three visits where I've had to cancel my visits, she's had to go off visits, you know. And then we come on a family visit, and she'd never been so happy, you know, like she's going up to all the staff, thanking them, and she was just a different person. And from that day on, I asked Mr. Ward, is there anything I can do for the family, and they gave me this job, and it sort of like made me, you know, I want to give something back, you know what I mean? Because the way they treated me, and it was like I was in prison. It was, you were free, you know. There was no one, you know, not walking around you, you know, just the children was playing football, rugby. She was just that, you know, it was fantastic. And that's what I thought, I would like to give a little bit back. Yeah. It's anxiety in the prison. She had three of them, but two of them were really bad, where my visit, I've had to get her to go. Because a lot of the staff took her. The staff were brilliant, in all fairness. But you know, it's like she, you know, the noise and but like she's getting a bit better now. But like, I was surprised. The first one I'd ever been on myself. And I'm 53 now. I could maybe give a bit back because I know quite a lot. You know what I mean? And I'm lucky that she's still behind me. People lose their wives and that when they come into prison, which is understandable. You know what I mean?
David speaks about how his earlier experiences in the criminal justice system impacted his children growing up.
It did affect my children, you know what I mean? Their mother died whilst I was in prison. So, you know what I mean? She took her own life, and it was my older sons, maybe, you know, like, it hit them hard, you know what I mean? Because I weren't there. And that's what's made me, you know, because I weren't there for lots of parts of their lives. And it's, you know, you think you're there, but you're not. And you don't know what you're doing to them. You know, look, it's easy for me to sit in prison, you know, and then, oh yeah, but I'm doing my, but like, it's still, it's harder, it's a lot, I know it's a lot harder for them, you know what I mean? They get no help, they got to do, it costs my missus 50, 60 quid a week, every week to come and see me. It's a financial burden, everything, no one's there. You know, it is very difficult.
David speaks about the family days and how these work. The team put these on to give men a chance to spend an extended period of time with their families. Let's hear from David now.
I'd be sitting having a visit with Amy. She'd run over to the thing, and the woman was there. She was a lovely woman. She was there. She was sitting there with him doing a bit of drawing with her. So my children come over, give me a picture so I can bring back, put it on my wall. Well, all that's gone now. And then like she'd sit, like do a bit of colouring. You know, she can pick it, play with a doll. It's all gone. You know, there's a few bits and bobs there, but there's no woman there with a, you know, like giving them a little bit of care and attention. It ran so brilliantly where you just feel like there's no staff about anyway, you know what I mean? And then they come around and talk to you. It's like, I was just walking around, you know, it was so hot the day we had it last time, I was just walking around the field with Matilda and Amy, just like, and it didn't feel like, all right, we had the fences, it didn't feel like we were in prison for 5 hours. It was just lovely. It's pretty sad, really. And there ain't many prisons around Britain that don't cater for the kids a little bit now, you know, which is, because that's what it's about, you know, like getting kids to see their family if they can, you know what I mean? Mr. Ward got me £400 worth of colouring books and all that, and so from now on I've got my own room, so from next week the prisoners can start coming and making cards for their kids and all that, for one or 2 hours a week, just little things like that, you know what I mean? He got £400 worth of stuff, which is very rare in the SO.
Next up, we'll hear from another David, who tells us the difficulties of being separated from his children and the dilemma of whether to tell his kids whether he is in prison.
It was hard, really hard, yeah. It was upsetting, hard, emotional. I don't know if I put myself back in the situation, but obviously... My little boy thinks I'm working, because when he comes out, I say, I'm building you a boat or a motorbike and things like that, so he thinks I'm at work, but my older kids know where I am. And it's not, it's disappointing and upsetting really to know that I'm in prison. That's my own stupid fault. not going to deal with it. Like the first visit I had, I was in tears because I see my little boy and my kids, and I had to tell him that daddy's going to be away for a bit again. And if it's the first time, it's upsetting, it breaks your heart. Like my little boy, they're asking me, when you coming home, daddy? Can I come and pick you up tomorrow? On the phone or on the visits, why are you working for so long? It's upsetting. It's not good. So I'd advise you, don't commit crime. It's just when you first come in, when they're used to you being at home, then their dad's suddenly taken away from them. That's the most hard bit. Apart from that, the visits, I get visits every week.
David speaks about how important his partner is in supporting him and his children whilst he's in prison.
Because obviously we've been together since I was 14, I'm 35 now. We're like best mates. So she's strong, I get through it, I'm strong. And she's got a good family background around her, because she lives with all her family. So she's got support from her sisters. My oldest daughter, she helps, my oldest son, he helps. So yeah, it's not too bad. It is hard for her, because like, I used to provide. And like the good things we had, you can't have no more. So it was a shock to the system. But in a good way, we've got to get used to that, because when I get out now, I'm not coming back to prison again. So I'm going to get a job. I've done what I've had to do. We've lived the lifestyle. Now it's about being at home, being a family man, 9 to 5. Do you know what I mean? The mug's game being in here.
David tells us about Storybook Dads, which every year helps over 5,000 prisoners to record bedtime stories for their children. By sending a story disc to their children, parents can bring comfort to their kids and share the joy of storytelling from behind bars.
Oh, well, it is, you get a book and you read the book through and you get recorded on a CD. And you do the, you get the animal figures, they make the noises, you read through the book. Or you can, like, the one in Oakwood I done, I made a story about my kids, like our own little story, and I put their names in it. And with the noise backgrounds, with the instruments, and oh, it's brilliant. It's worth doing if you've never done it. Do it. They got sent out a CD, yeah, so they can listen to me.
Next, we'll hear from James, who spoke to us about his history with the army, which led to him serving time in a military prison.
I got discharged from the army, then went through the army system. But the military jail, as all the reports, it's 10 times better than the way these civilian jails are run. It's more order, there's a lot more discipline, and you respect the officers in there more, the lads that run it. Well, yeah, it is routine, because when you come from, obviously I got discharged, so I come through the military jail, straight and then into the HMP system. So I'm sitting down healthcare, I'm waiting to see a nurse or a doctor, I'm quite sitting up straight. And then I'm looking around, the lads are lying down, the hands down the pants, I'm thinking, well, they're going to get told off in a minute. Someone's going to come in and absolutely go mental at them, but obviously they didn't. And then you could say as the years have gone by through this system, I get a bit lazy and I start becoming like that. I've got two daughters, but I've spent a lot of time in jail away from my eldest, so that's why the family visits are important, because I've got to try and build a bond with her, because I missed the first 7 years of her life in custody, and then I've come away again after that, and then away again after that. So the visits, it's the only way I can get a bond with her. I was in jail when she was born, so I started off down south in Chelmsford. That's the first jail she come to when she was born. So I seen her as a baby, and then obviously, this is what she's seen, this is her life, which it isn't fair on her. So has it affected her? I say, yeah, it has affected her, affected her a lot. So you need the visits to try and put wrongs right, and you need that special time with them to try and have a good chat with them, etc. So it's valuable time, so they shouldn't be taking that time away. Normal visit would have held her as a baby, which it's thinking, wow, I've just come from the army, through the jail system, and now I'm holding a baby. It's mental, it's scary. So big shock to the system. And then when you're finally released, it's like you're playing catch-up. You're like trying to fit in all the years you've lost. And then once you do fit in, everything's back to normal. Bang, you're straight back in on another sentence and back to square one. So all the good work you put in, you've ruined straight away.
An estimated 20,000 veterans are now in the criminal justice system. 8,500 of those are in prison, which is over 10% of the prison population. The proportion of those in prison who are veterans has risen by more than 30% in the last 5 years. James talks to us about what he thinks are the reasons for this.
So a lot of ex-soldiers hit the drink and the drugs. Maybe they don't want to sleep, the drugs keep them awake, the drink helps knock them out for a bit. But then you fall into a vicious cycle, then your relationships, everything built around it, and then you just isolate yourself and then you're on edge then. The slightest thing will start you off, and it's just a vicious circle. Like, we're told sentenced by the military court system, promised the jail system would have the best help and all this marvellous talk. There was no help. I got out. Nothing, so I've just left. I've gone from school to the army, done all that time in jail, and just chucked out onto the, just out onto Civvy Street. So it's a big wide world. Working in factories, bouncing from job to job. It's just nothing compared to the army and back to what I did best in the war zones and the adrenaline rushes. It's just, so you're quitting job after job, and the next thing you know, you're back in that rut, you're fighting uptown, recall. So recall, do the whole recall, get back out. Then same again a couple of years later, fighting again, then locked back up, and you promised all this help and nothing ever exists. You've got criminologists, sociologists, all these people doing research into it, and a lad that gets out and he's lost everything, his family have disowned him, his kids don't want to talk to him, just say he's homeless, he's got no roof over his head, he's got no choice. He will probably choose to go straight back and commit crime to try and earn some money or fund his drugs or whatever. But if he gets out and his family is still there supporting him, his children want to see him, he's got a roof over his head, he's likely to stay out jail longer than the other person. That's common sense, logic. But so someone high up, whether in government, politician, they need to realise this and direct some money from the Treasury or whatever for family visits. Well, my hopes for the future, when I release that this is my last sentence now, 40 years old, I can't. It's bad as it sounds. It's a young kid's game. I look round and I feel like the granddad, the dinosaur now, and I think I've got to knock this on the head. Plus, my eldest is 17. I don't want to be in it. I could be a granddad soon. A scary thought, but... And then it's just breaking the heart, so I need to stay out there now for them. And otherwise, I will lose everything down to me, so time to grow up.
Lastly, we'll hear from Matthew, who shares his emotional story of having his child adopted and how the support from the Rainbow Team was so valuable to him.
Children and families here, like with Nikki and Helen, they've been amazing. When I've been here in the past, with my son going through adoption and my daughter being with a different relationship, I still speak to her. I've done me and my dad, I've done storybooks, I've done, they've got me in touch, because they work with social services as well, they've helped me do letters, and they've built relationships, helped me, give me the confidence to have relationships with my daughter. I mean, me and my daughter were growing apart, and now me and my daughter do speak, and it's only from when I come to prison and having the these here to support me, and letters going out on social services and that, and the little card things that we make and all that, it builds a relation. Because I'm shit at conversation. I mean, like, if I took my daughter out, I mean, I'm so, how is it, street, for instance, I kept myself at a distance from my kids because I felt like I was not a risk to them, but it was a risky situation for them to be around me because of, like, my lifestyle, what I was doing. Like, I smoke crack, I smoke weed, I do mad moves and that, and if she was there, it would have been risky. And with my little boy, he got adopted. And I was in a mess when I came in, and Helen and Nikki was there to help me do my letters.
Matthew shared some information on the time leading up to his son being adopted. He reflects on the many factors involved and his own feelings around this.
So he's gone from family arrangement into foster while we're being assessed. When it came to court, they said, no, we're going for adoption. And we didn't have a leg to stand on because we both got criminal record, mental health, drug history. So when it came through court, both parents, we ain't got stability. They're going to have to tell him that he's adopted, he'll know who we are, so in time he can come and find us and we get to see a picture of him once a year at the social store. I'm so grateful for that. But looking back now, I think it was the right decision. I know it's sad as fuck to say it, but it probably was the right decision right now, because if he came back to me tomorrow, Sally, we'd change our act, he'd give us a house and that son back, it would be amazing, we'd never go down that path again. But our coping mechanism to deal with it at the time of what we was going through, I don't drink, she don't drink, was drugs. So the more stress we was under, the more we're... Like, Hunter's not around us, innit? So, yeah, let's go smoke a crack pipe or let's go sniff some coke. He ain't going to come back tonight and blah, blah, blah. So, but we got trapped in that spiral.
Supported by the Rainbow Project, Matthew had the chance to write a goodbye letter to his son. Here's him sharing more.
Do a letter to explain, yeah, we have to do the one. One, a goodbye, because it would never be goodbye, but for now it was. It's a goodbye letter, innit? So we had to write our letters to explain what's happened. I don't think I had to, but it's a box. You know, you have to make your box, your memory box. And they helped me. They give me all different craft stuff, nice paper. And they helped me to know what to do that. So I ended up writing him a letter and making him a card and getting a little few things that I made up to put in his memory box, and then I'd stick photos in it. They took a photo of me while I'm in prison and I'd put it in a frame. And that was it. Every week there's a course. Like, you had like four little booklets, one for each week. And you do a booklet, and there's like a craft thing to do in it at the end of it. One was draw a picture, the second would be write a poem, and the third would be to do the picture frame, and then you have your photo took and put in it. All that stuff I sent off to social services to prove, look, whilst I'm in jail, I'm fighting for my little boy and I'm trying to do my best. And I would never have done that if it weren't for children and families.
Matthew's story is difficult to hear, but it's clear how much the support from the team has meant to him at such an emotional time in his life. From all of the men who spoke to us at Huel, it's obvious how important their families are, and anything which can help maintain those family ties and bonds is key for them, their well-being and plans upon release.
A big thank you to the staff and residents of HMP Huel for sharing their stories with us, and thanks to Nikki and Helen for hosting us. It's clear to see the amazing work they're doing at Huel and how deeply it's valued by the men and their families. Nikki and Helen provide this amazing support with limited resources, so we hope by sharing their incredible impact, we can help them secure more funding to expand the work they do even further.
This is our last episode of the series, so we want to say thank you to all the other prisons featured in this season. Preston, Garth, Wymart, Belmarsh and Pentonville. We are taking a break to explore what we'd like to do next, but for now you can expect social justice info, stats and prison insights from Bird on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok at Bird Podcast. You can also find out more from our website, birdpodcast.co.uk.
See you next time on Bird.